This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
Welcome to all of you. I'm guessing after a week like this, there's a lot going on through your mind. You've just been inundated with a lot of information. You're trying to decide how you're going to use it this coming year. There's probably also a variety of emotions. Excitement. You're ready to get back, actually see your students, open up those new books, try out some of these activities you've heard about. I remember the first year, or my first classroom, getting it rolling. I was beyond thrilled. I dreamed of teaching since I was in fifth grade, so this was a dream come true. I packed my bags and moved to a new community and prepped my classroom. I remember the first morning I was so excited. I was also so nervous. What if I couldn't keep control? What if these parents in this community struggled to support me? Respect me. What if the students thought I was just an absolute dud? I remember dealing with some fears that morning. And then to top it off, the school board chairman visited my classroom for my first 15 to 20 minute opening. But you know, at the end of that day, I remember thinking, this is just absolute fun. I'm going to love this. But by mid-October, things began to change, and they were changing fast. My classroom was sinking. It was fairly obvious to me and the board there was an issue going on, and I couldn't seem to get it fixed. They dropped by and they gave me some tips, but we just couldn't get it going. We just could not get it back going again. By the second week of November, the school board chairman dropped by my classroom one afternoon. After chatting a bit, he said, we'd like to just relaunch your classroom. We'd like to bring a former teacher in, and she's going to go over your schedule, she's going to go over your procedures, and then for 2 to 3 days, she's going to teach your classroom, and you're going to sit in the back of the classroom. I really didn't have many options but to say yes, sir. Who wants to drown? So the following afternoon, we had our meeting, created a plan, and I went home with absolute zero books to prep. I got to school the next morning 30 minutes late so that the transition from me to her would go just a little smoother, be just a little less awkward, and I sat in the back of the classroom, and she taught for, I don't remember, 2 to 3 days. And the only thing I did was, I think one afternoon she asked if I'd like to do story time. But that was literally all I did. I didn't monitor breaks, anything. I just sat. And then she leaves. You know, I was scared to launch the year. I'm really scared now. It failed. Why do I think it's going to work now? But I was determined. I wanted it to work, because I just had enough of a taste to know that if I could get it to go, I would love it. After a couple rocky weeks, we began to kind of find our rhythm, and by the end of February, the board asked if I'd come back the following year. Isn't there just a little bit something interesting about that story? That was the exact same classroom. It was the same teacher, the same students, same curriculum, same workload, almost identical the same schedule, and almost identical the same procedures. One time it flunked, the next time it survived. It actually went well. It shows me that the difference between a teacher that succeeds and a teacher that fails, actually there's not that much difference. Just a few little tweaks can make all the difference in navigating or leading a classroom well. Today, in this breakout, We're going to be just looking at a few of those little things you can do that will hopefully make your classroom just flow just a little smoother. You know, when you're asked to lead, really leading a situation, you can easily break up your workload into three pieces. You know, you have to prepare for whatever it is, then you have to do whatever it is, and then there's kind of that wrap up at the end of the project. So, you know, if you're responsible for maybe a community trash-a-thon, first you need to prepare. You need to line up the trucks, decide where you're going to pick up the trash, make sure that all the equipment's there, the trash bags, the gloves. Depending on the type of trash-a-thon, you might need to let the community know where you're going. And then comes the actual trash-a-thon, the actual day. And if you're the leader, you're going to have to give instructions. Tell them what streets, what to do with the trash. And you're going to need to keep tab of where all your groups are at. And is everyone able to keep eye on the time? Are we doing okay with getting our project done in a timely manner? And then after the day, you need to double check as a leader to make sure all the trucks are returned or all the trash was taken to where it needed to be. And then reflect a bit, you know, running it next summer, what would we do different? Teaching is exactly the same way. You need to prep, you need to prepare, then you present, and then you have your reflection, that after school, things you need to work through. So first we're going to be looking at your prepping, preparing, and when it comes to preparing, I'm going to be spending, in this section, I'll spend most of my time in preparing for the year, but you have preparation for the year, preparation for the week, and preparation for the day. So let's look first at preparing for the year. As you prep for the year, there are four areas I specifically think about as I prepare my classroom. I need to prepare academics, procedural plan, social, and myself. There's just a few things I want to think about in just those couple of areas. So first, let's look at the academic or your class plan. From each one of my elementary teachers that are on my team, I would ask them for just some basic information. And you have it there on your handout, the daily rhythm of the class they're going to be teaching, their year layout, and their grading. Now, I gave you an example of a very basic plan there. If you go to page 5 in your handout, it'll say science. And this is just a very basic plan for my first or second year teachers that I would ask them to do for all of their classes. I want them to know the daily rhythm for what they're going to teach. Does that mean during the year they can swap up a little bit? Absolutely. But you want something that's just kind of that rhythm. I want them to create the year plan and then know what they're going to do with their grading. Now, after you've taught a little bit longer and you know a little bit more about your curriculum, go to page 6, then I have one that's more fleshed out. This would be a devotional plan for some year. I don't know where I pulled it off of, but this has been one of my devotionals. And then I have an example on page 7 of a math one as well. These are more fleshed out. I wouldn't expect a first or second year teacher to need to give this to me, but at the basis, I'd want them to at least give me one that looked similar to the science one. At least know what they're going to do every day, just the basic rhythm, how they're going to lay out their class for the year, schedule-wise, and then an idea of how they're going to grade. Once you have a rough idea of what you're going to be doing academically, you need to come up with a plan on how you're going to run your ship. At the end of this first section, I'm going to give you a chance to stand, and then you can share maybe an idea you got this week with a friend, you know, something you're going to add to your classroom that maybe this year will go smooth, or maybe you can even ask a question that's been burning. What would you do in your classroom about? But you need to create a management plan. Management plans are super important because they set the tone of what your classroom feels like. They help you use your time well. And they also limit frustration. So that they set your tone. You know, had I been standing at these doors and offered you a cup of coffee and some fancy little pastry, the tone in here would have felt completely different than what it did when you walked in a couple minutes ago. But since I'm not a barista or a baker, you had just a very simple entrance. But, you know, the procedures affect your classroom. What you have your students do when they walk in through the morning, the first thing affects the tone of what your classroom is like. So you need to think about what do you want your classroom to feel like, and then what can you do to give that feel? I gave you, so there are three things I think about when I'm creating my classroom. I want it to be welcoming, safe, and I want to create the wonder of learning. I want it to be welcoming, safe, and I want to create the wonder of learning. So I want it to be welcoming. So part of my procedures is that I am at the door, and pre-COVID, I shook their hands. I teach 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, taught 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, and so they come walking to the door, and good morning, and I shook their hand, everyone. Then once COVID come and we were trying to limit that, I tried to be at the door, and I handed them, we called it our tags. It was basically just a small little, it was a piece of paper that gave them their checklist for the day of all their assignments and things they could work on when they were not in class. But I wanted my atmosphere to be welcoming, and so I created a procedure that hopefully made it feel that way for them right away as they came into my classroom in the morning. Procedures allow you to use time well. You start, you know, a minute here, a minute there. It adds up insanely fast. You know, 5 minutes a day, that's 25 minutes a week. There goes your whole science class. You know, multiply that by 170 days. You can easily lose quite a bit of time. And I'm not saying that you need to panic and use every single moment every day throughout your day. But if you have a procedure that allows you to go smoothly, it gives you more time to sit at the lunch table. Another extra minute or two out in the ball field, or history class can go one more minute to continue that wonderful discussion you're having. So procedures allow you to put time where you want it to be instead of waiting on a student to get a book out of the locker. It limits frustration for both you and the student. They know your expectations. You know what you're going to hold them to. It just lubricates the classroom and things can just flow. In your handout, I gave you a list of questions, and this is only a start. But I gave you a list of questions, and I'm not going to read over them right here, but just a couple things that when a teacher comes onto my team and begins planning their year, a couple questions, these are just some of the questions I ask them to get them thinking about what their classroom is going, how their classroom is going to flow. So you prep your academics, you know how you want your classroom to flow. And then something I don't think I thought about when I taught my first or second year, and that is that I'm actually, as a leader in the classroom, I'm actually also in charge of their social development. And so whatever age bracket you're working with, it's good just to take a little bit of time before the year actually starts and say, you know what do I want my students to know? And I put just a few, down here on your paper. Obviously, tailor it to your community, but it's good to think ahead. What do I want them to know, and where are the places am I going to teach it? I'm going to teach it in devotions. What are the moments I can begin building these skills? One of them that I try to make sure gets at least one time while they're in my classroom is showing them how to meet new people. That's kind of scary for upper elementary. And so I tell them, you know, really, guys, it's not that terrible scary. As long as you know just kind of simple procedures, you can do it. So we'll have a devotions, and I'll show them. If you want to meet someone, just walk up and say, hi, my name is, what's your name? And usually, once that introduction's over, I said, you know, it might be good to have a question in your mind. Where are you from? Or what grade are you in school? Just having a devotions that shows them how to meet someone new. And then if they're comfortable with it, have them practice with each other. Sometimes some of my groups are not. It just is awkward. They're more comfortable actually coming up front and meeting me for the first time than that they are meeting their peers. And so I'll do that sometimes. But you model that. One time, I had a visitor drop by my classroom, and she was a stranger to me. And she come walking in the, she stepped in the door, and I was very nervous. And so I just kind of was responding out of my intuitiveness. I just wasn't really thinking. It's just, I think I just walked up, and I said, hi, my name is. And I just kind of formally went through meeting a new person. And after our guests left, one of my students said, Miss Darlene, you did it just like you taught us. Absolutely. You know, you show them that having just that simple, some of those simple phrases can take the fear off of meeting someone new. You're the leader. They're watching you, how you respond socially. You're modeling good social skills. You're also the spiritual leader. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because I had another workshop that kind of broke the spiritual leading side down a little bit more. The only thing I want to say here, though, is as a spiritual leader, recognize it's your responsibility to give them the base of their knowledge of God and to develop their love of God. Invest time in thinking what that looks like for you. Talk to your administrator to know what he expects and what he would appreciate you to make sure gets done in that area. As a spiritual leader, you're their protector. You're their spiritual protector. So make rules that protect them spiritually. Make rules that helps them do what's right. I make procedures and rules to limit cheating. I try to be careful in the way I ask questions that does not lead them to easily lie. It's not that I want to shelter them, but at the same time, they are developing, and I don't want to be a stumbling stone that causes something to happen that's then going to weigh heavy on their conscience. So you're their spiritual protector. You need to prepare yourself. And as I was thinking about this section, I had just read through King David, and it hit me that, you know, what did King David actually do to prepare himself to be king? You know, it does seem like he kind of went and created that little rebel group. I don't know how many years that had been before he became king, but he did kind of go create that little rebel group that kind of hung out in the mountains. But aside from that, it doesn't really seem like he pursued his personal development. He didn't follow the army intentionally trying to learn maneuvers and battle tactics. He wasn't making pilgrimages to Jerusalem. It was God. It was God who prepared him to go out to become king. It was God who sent the bear. It was God who sent Goliath. It was God who took him into the king's court. Now, those methods of teaching were probably not fun. They look absolutely frightening. But I thought that's kind of beautiful, that ultimately it was God who prepared them to come. Now David had to do his part. God was able to do that to David because he lived a life of daily surrender and worship. So if you and I want God to be able to develop us, prepare us for what's coming, you need to live life in daily surrender and worship. And as you live life in daily surrender and worship, God will take you into the courts to do formal teaching for you, to prepare you. He'll send you into experiences and circumstances that will shape who you are and prepare you for the work that's out ahead of you. So you're ready for the year. You have your year prep. And then I really think it's very important that you don't, as you get your year rolling, that you don't miss your weekly prep. Friday afternoon, sometimes Saturday, take an hour And at the minimum, at least write down, I'm going to be teaching math lessons 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. Science, I'm going to be doing a review, a test, lesson 16, 17, 18. At least at the minimum. That way you don't get any surprises about some materials you might should pick up, or questions about maybe a really complex lesson coming up that you might need a teacher to help you, give you some ideas for. At the minimum, Friday, Saturday, put an hour in and just at least write down what you're going to do the following week. So year prep, weekly prep, daily prep. Daily prep needs to be structured and organized, kind of similar to the way you organize your day. You plan and you schedule your day with the students. And once you tell the students adios at 3 o'clock, it's kind of easy just to let a schedule just fall by the wayside. But it's good to put some time into thinking into your schedule from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock. Watch the clock. Give yourself some downtime. But then as you begin getting into your prep, don't let yourself get stuck on one subject too long. It can be very easy, so I tended to plan from the beginning of my morning to the end of the day. And guess what? It got 5 o'clock and I was only at my mid-morning class. Well, I've got hours yet to finish out my day. So what I'm saying here is kind of know, you know what, by 4 o'clock I should be done with my math prep. 4:30, you kind of have a rough idea of a rhythm in your afternoon to make sure that you're actually moving. I found that planning my day backwards actually worked really well. You know, around 3:30 or so, I started work. I start planning from my afternoon class and work backwards. It kept me rolling just a little bit. I felt the pressure of it, I guess, a little bit more. And I was able to get my prep work done a little faster. But create a rhythm and a plan for your afternoon. You, in the afternoon, you've got grading to get done. I'm not going to say a lot about grading, except just don't let this trump your whole time. If you find it's taking too much, talk to a former teacher or administrator and see if you can get it cut back. Because very quickly, it can take more than what you, it can begin taking your whole time. So get your grading done. And then at the minimum, for my first and second year teachers, I ask that you at least read over your lesson. Now, I know that sounds very, very minimum, but you've got a lot on your plate until you get your class cleaned up, until you get your grading done, and you've got a lot going on, especially if you're teaching multi-grades. So my first and second year teachers, I say, look, guys, if you can at least just read over your lesson for me. And then you might want to just circle something or put a sticky note in there so you remember a little bit about something. And then if you have extra time, you can come back in and add something to a class, but at least, at the minimum, go through all your classes and just at least read over them. Okay. That brings us to the end of our prep. Our next section, we're going to actually take you into your actually presenting. So I'm going to give you just about 2 minutes or so, a minute or two here. You can stand. And what is one little tweak you're going to add to your procedures this week or this year? Or maybe there's a question that you have. I think I've seen some experienced teachers are also in here. So maybe ask some questions. Maybe there's a question that's burning in your mind that you can ask a neighbor or share with your neighbor an idea. Why don't you stand, get a little change of position for for a couple seconds here. Okay, that was a fun buzz. So you're prepped. You know what you're doing, and now you have to present. Now, if I'm completely honest with you all, in the three categories of teaching, why did my classroom tank? I actually think a big portion of it actually is in this section right here. I think this is what made my classroom plummet. And I think it boils down to I did not know how to exert my authority. I didn't know how to find that balance of standing up front and saying, this is what we're going to do in a kind but firm way. I didn't have the tools to pull that off. So in this next section, I'm hoping to pass along to you a few things that I have learned that have helped that helped pull my classroom back up. So in this section, when you're presenting, I split it into two things, connection and expectation. So connection. First point, you are friendly, but you are not your student's friend. Those parents are paying a lot of money for you to be there. You're kind of an expensive friend, if that's the category you go into. You're friendly, which means you smile, you're welcoming, you're available, you're on their team, you're going to help them, you're friendly, but you're not their friend. And I had to think about, why is it that we tend to go down that, why is it so easy to slide into that category of, or into that, slide into that idea of wanting to be their friend? For myself, it came down to two things. We all want to be liked. And I think especially as a first and second year teacher, we're not sure if we're doing it right. And it's the students that are giving us the most feedback. And so it's easy to kind of use their feedback as my judge. You know, yes, I'm doing a good job. It's not going so great. Make sure that you have, it's good if you can have someone outside your classroom that you're running ideas through, that you're talking to, that they are the ones that can affirm your classroom is going well. Don't use your student's affirmation. Go to your co-teachers, your administrator. Maybe there's a former teacher in the community that you can say, hey, would you just drop by my classroom one morning for about 30 minutes? Bless you, that sounds a little scary. I never had the nerve to quite pull that off myself, but maybe there's someone else you can invite to come in. Don't go from, what I'm saying here is, don't live off your student's affirmation. I think for myself, the first year, it's easy for me to go this way because I was terrified of losing control of my classroom. And so kind of this, in the back of my mind, I thought, well, if they're my friend, I'll at least keep them with me, even though it might not look so great. But if you've taught before, have you ever had the experience where you felt like the student liked you one day, and the next day it felt like they didn't like you? Very quickly, you realize that student relationships can go up and down. And so running your classroom in a way to keep control by being a friend is extraordinarily fickle. Teachers, you have authority because you've been given authority by God, by the board, and by the parents. You don't have to live in fear of losing control of the students because you are backed by higher authorities who are giving you the authority to come in and lead this group. Friendly but not a friend. Second point is joy factor. A couple of my points come out of the book Lead Like Teach Like a Champion by Doug LaMalve. I found this book hugely shaping for me as a teacher. I really do highly recommend it. He talks about the joy factor. You bring energy. You bring delight into what you're doing as a teacher, into what you're learning, into your interactions. Be excited about what you're teaching. The students can pick up on that in your tone of voice and how fast you're talking. They know if you are enjoying what you're teaching. One year, actually, it's not that terrible long ago, kind of embarrassing, but I realized how pa is connected to finding the area of circle. I just had never broke it down or really thought about it. I teach 3 grades of math, and so I kind of have to pick and choose the concepts I dig deep in just simply because I don't have time to teach everything. And this one year, for some reason, I decided, well, why does pa actually work and find the area of a circle? And so one evening, I just was messing around a little bit with him. And I had seen this diagram in my teacher's book a number of times, but just never paid attention to it. So I decided one day to just break it down a little bit for my students and let them figure out how pi works. And so that morning in class, I think this was maybe 5th grade. I think this was my 5th grade. And so I got to math class, and I wanted them just to break it down a little bit. So So I had this diagram up there, and then I asked them, I said, so what? If we're looking at a circle, what do we call this? This is our radius. Mm-hmm. So in this situation, our radius is 3. Now, could you tell me the area of that little square? These are fifth graders. And so they look here, and they're like, yeah, you know, sure, you know, that's 9. And then I asked them, I said, so now, you know, could you get me the area of the larger square? If you went 9 times 4, wouldn't that give you the area of the whole square? And they're still wondering, where am I going with this? But then I asked them, so if you find the area of the whole square, that's not our end goal, right? We're wanting the area of the circle. So if we get 36, we're too large, right? So 9 times 4 is too big. What do y'all think we should multiply 9 by? Now remember, we're finding the area of a circle. So what little special number do you think you're going to use? These are fifth graders, you know, so they're thinking about it. And all of a sudden you just start seeing the light bulbs come on. And pi, that number came back up for them. Oh, you go 9 times 3.14. One of my guys just blurted out, oh, that is so cool. And he grabbed a pencil and just started scribbling and started trying to solve one on his own. You know, did I do anything fancy for that math class? I didn't pop any balloons. They didn't stand on any chairs. I just brought the wonder of what I had learned the night before. That it's going to take 3 of these squares and a little bit more. I can't use all 4. And my guys are just thrilled. You bring the joy factor into your teaching by your own wonder of what you're learning. Be excited. Find the joy of life around you. So notice the sunrise. Notice the crunchy, buttery flavor of the toast you eat in the morning. Notice those pockets of joy throughout the day and bring that wonder and enjoyment. That wonder and enjoyment will automatically come into the classroom with you. You don't have to bring it. It comes right in with you. That's how that sums up Doug Lamov's way of seeing it. But as Christians, we can take this joy factor just another scoop deeper. You and I can teach out of the joy of the Lord. That joy brings strength. It brings stability to who you are as a teacher. You can weather rough days. You can weather a grumpy student because you're living in the strength of the Lord. It brings consistency. Now, then I have teachers automatically asking, well, what do I do to keep that joy? There's really nothing you can do. Yes, maintain your relationship with the Lord, but it's a gift from God. I learned this one year that I lost the joy, specifically the joy of teaching, for a couple weeks. It was 100% gone. It was gone. So I'd get up in the morning, I'd pray for my classes, I'd pray for my students, and I went to school. And I served out of who I was the best I could. In a couple weeks, the cloud drifted. God gave me back the joy from my classroom. And it wasn't a fun experience to go through. It actually relaxed me. Up to that point, I'd lived in fear. What if I lose the joy of teaching? You know, I need to not burn out. I need to do all these little things. No. It's a gift from God. Relax, thank Him for it, live in it. Be kind. Next point there is be kind. Be gracious. You're developing students. And if you want to experience remembering how vulnerable it is to be a student, sign up for summer term. I've come up here for 3 summers and absolutely loved. I've taken so much back to my classroom. But I remember the first year I came up here, one of the biggest things I took back was that walking through that experience of what it feels like to be a student again, the vulnerability that you're put on, it helped me be a little kinder to my 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. Be kind in how you talk about him after school. If you're constantly bashing and whining and complaining about Martha, it's going to be really hard for love just to shine through you to her the next morning. Be kind how you talk about him. Next point, every student should feel like they are missed by you if they're not in the classroom. I had two teachers that, honestly, while I was in their classroom, I think they'd have had a better day had I not been there. I'm sure I was a mess to teach. I don't blame them, but it wasn't a fun experience as a student. And it's made me aware that your students can pick up. They should know you're on their team. They should know you will go the extra mile to be there for them. Right along with that question comes up, should you have pets? And if you do, how do you work through that? I'm going to go out on a limb and say, no, you should not have. You should not have pets. Pets monopolize you when it comes to making decisions. They control subtly things you decide for the classroom. Pets control your time that you should be giving to other students. No. You should love all your students. Does that mean that some click a little more than others? Sure. But none should fall into your pet category. If you find this happening, a few things I thought about is, check your heart. Do you have, so even set aside, step outside the classroom and thinking about people in general, do you love people with open hands? Or when you go to youth, is there kind of a small group that you drift to? Is there certain personalities that you kind of think have life a little more together than other personalities? You know, how we love people outside the classroom come right into the classroom. And so, you know, go to the God, ask him to broaden, build, open your heart to be able to love people well. If you're having problems with a specific student or a group of students, invest into them specifically. Sometimes I realize that it's not that I don't like them or wouldn't. I'm not with them. Maybe due to the way the classroom is laid out or maybe their needs. They don't need me as much. Just investing into that student specifically. Maybe you should try to decode why they are being so hard to love, because if you are loving people like God wants you to, you've invested into them, but something is still not clicking, maybe there actually is a little social glitch that you could help them with. Maybe they are coming across as cocky. Maybe there's something a little awkward about their relational skills. Maybe you could try to help them, shape them, to make them easier for others to interact with. Okay, that wraps up our connection. Friendly but not a friend. Bring joy, be kind, make sure every student knows they're wanted in your classroom. So, one part is your connection. The other part is being able to set expectations and hold those expectations. So that's what we're looking at in the next section. Set the standard. You're the leader. Set the standard for what you expect. And here again, I'm going to Mr. Doug Lamov for several ideas. This is one of his, just kind of tweaked up. But how do you want your students to behave when you're teaching? I teach mine that you need to sit up, look up, speak up. And so right from the first day, I say, all right, when I am up speaking, or when we're in class, you need to sit up, you need to look up, which means if I'm talking, you're looking at me. If your friend is giving an answer, all your eyes should be on your friend. But you sit up, you look up, engage with the speaker, and speak up. We all want to hear your story. We want to hear your comment. Look up, sit up, look up, speak up. Another expectation I use, this is maybe more for myself as a teacher, is no opt-out. I learned this from Mr. Doug Lamal, no opt-out. And this is when I am up teaching and I ask a question and the student doesn't give me an answer. Well, what do? It creates kind of an awkward moment. Also, it can kind of feed that idea that, well, if I'm scared, I don't have to talk. Mr. Rebel can kind of use this as a way to control the situation. I mean, it can get just kind of awkward. So what are you going to do? No opt-out really helped me navigate the situation. So I'm teaching class, and I ask student one, you know, what's the capital of Uganda? And, you know, they clip off. I go to student two, capital Norway. You know, we're going down the list. You would get to the capital of, say, Tanzania, and the student just pulls a blank. And they're just sitting there silent. And I'll just say, can anyone help him out? Someone shouts it out and say, what's the capital of Tanzania? They still have to talk. But I got some help. And that's how I say it. Can anyone help us out? And they get used to that. Can someone help us out? And someone just calls the answer, and we go right back. You do an I 100% all the time, every time, make a student always say, come back to them. Not always, but I like to do it often enough in my classroom that it's second nature for them. So coming back and have them just repeat the answers, one way of getting them to answer. Another thing I do is scaffold the question down. Make it simpler for them. So I'm teaching science class and I ask my fourth or fifth grader, why does my glass of iced tea have water droplets running down the edge? We're in review time and this poor fourth or fifth grader is just completely blank. But I want them to talk. And so I scale the question back. I say, well, do you remember, you know, two science classes ago, we were talking about the three states of water. Remember we had two of them up on the desk. Can you give me the three states of water? I get them at least talking. I said, which of those states is actually floating around in the air? Okay, vapor. All right, and I think, okay, you guys good and started. Now, who can get us to the next stage in answering this question? Do you see how at least get them talking? Get them involved? It helps them kind of get over that fear of getting thrown a question that they're not sure what they're going to do with. It's no opt-out. You train, it's actually, for me, it came back to training myself as a teacher. How to jump from one student to how to navigate with a student who couldn't come up with an answer themselves. Jump to another student, get help, have them repeat it, or scaffold it down so they can begin talking themselves. So you set the standard. This is what you're going to expect out of the classroom. And the students get very comfortable and very familiar with it. You know they're going to have to answer when you call their name. They know what you expect when they're sitting in their desk. You set the standard for both behavior and academic. But how do you get them to do that standard? I think the key to it is in the training. You need to train them to be able to do what you're expecting them to do. Sometimes we just think they're going to be able to do it. But in all reality, you need to train them to get to the point you want. So the first day of school, first 2 days of school, 3 days of school, it's a lot of training. So it's, you know, from the very simple things to this is how we're going to pass papers. I'm going to give you a stack, and it's going to go from you to you to you. So, all right, we're going to practice. So I go down through, and I give them each their stack of papers. Say, all right, pass them across. The end students are not all, you know, everyone has their papers all the way down to the end. And I'll say, guys, that was incredibly done. Y'all did it so smooth. You didn't drop any papers. You didn't whack each other. That was exactly the way I want you to do it all year long, just like that, just like that. I train them. I show them. This is what, all right, guys, now we're going to need to pick up a lot of papers throughout the year. This is how I want you to pick up. And so we'll train them. So you're going to pass your paper to her. She's going to lay your paper on top of hers. She's going to take these two papers, hand them to her, You'll put those two on top of yours, and you're going to pass them across. All right, guys, show me you can do it. And then if it gets a little shuffly, because that one's a little harder, you know. All right, guys, let's go back across. Let's try it again. And then as the papers come here to the end, I will give instructions. You know, it depends on the year, how we're sitting. You know, I'll tell them what they're going to do with their papers. You know, does the back person just stand up and pick them all up? Do I go pick them up? Do they pass them forward and the front student put them away or whatever? But you train them. You show them this is how I expect you to do it. I train mine how to enter the classroom because that can be the most awkward moment of the day. Can be. For both me and the students sometimes, if they don't know what I expect and how to navigate it. So I actually train them. Say, okay, guys, every morning, this is what I'm going to expect. I will be standing at the door. As you come in, you know, whether it's a handshake, whether it's handing a card, this is the way you enter. If you expect them to say good morning, you tell them. You tell them, say, I'm going to wish you a good morning. And common courtesy is for you to wish me one back. And you give them you tell them exactly what you expect. If you expect them to make eye contact with you, you tell them that. I didn't. I know some teachers do. I never quite got myself to that point. But I think that's wonderful if you do. Require eye contact when you say good morning, when they say good morning to you. And we practice that one. That is one I specifically practice just because it kind of makes it feel more natural to them. They find it more enjoyable to be the teacher in this practice round and I the student. I don't know why, but they do seem to enjoy that. So I have one of them come up, stand at my doorway. They're the teacher with the paper or whatever. And I come in the morning and they tell me good morning. And I'll show them what a bad one looks like. You know, I just grab the paper, good morning, and walk to my locker. Kind of rudely. They see me treating their peer like that, and they realize how rude that looks. But I'm training, you train them. This is what you expect. Show them what you expect. Coming in from break. So on the first couple days, before we do anything, I always give them, okay, guys, now we're going in from break. This is what's going to happen when you go in from break. You're going to kick your shoes on the rug. You need to clean your shoes out. As you walk in, you need to at least kick twice. You're going to line up here or you're going to do this. You know, give them the exact three things you're going to do as they go into the classroom. When they get into the classroom, give them feedback. Guys, that was perfect. No, that was not the way you navigate the hallway. Let's go out and try it again. So we go out and we come back down the hallway the way I want. Do you see I don't punish? I don't reward. Let's go again. I'm training them. This is the first two or three days. I don't get through all my lessons. I don't get through all my classes. But first two or three days, I'm training. That's the goal. That's what we do the first two or three days. You know, you're training the students, but you're also training yourself. Training yourself what to watch for, training yourself to the rhythms. So give yourself a little bit of a break. Don't be too hard on yourself. It takes a little bit, even for you as a teacher, to find that rhythm. But it's amazing how quickly it comes for both you and the students. So train, and then what you train, make happen. Follow through. I had a lovely classroom plan, but it didn't work. Once you get the plan and you train, you've got to make it work out then. So, in your handout, I don't know what page it is. I think it's toward the last page. I have a classroom management. That hit print for you all to be able to look over. This is what I require from all my elementary teachers. And you can see it just steps you through all the procedures, where I want the students to be and how I want them to do. If you go to the page 10, it is. Down at the bottom, you're going to see discipline. So I just thought through a couple things, like, you know what, I really need this to, I care about this, I want to keep my eye on this, I want to train them for this. But these are not really getting disciplined, I just want to keep an eye on these. And then what I do every year is I have a sectional mind management plan that I put as my highest issues to watch. And this is going to vary per classroom, per teacher, but for me, if I can control when they're talking, and if I can make them plan ahead for everything, then I'm good to go. Those are my two biggest issues in the classroom. So when I'm creating a discipline plan, I think of the specific things like that, and I might come up with an idea. You know what? If they don't have their homework done, they're going to need to stand from break and finish it. Just black and white. You might want to just think ahead, you know what, these are going to be the two, three things in my classroom. Talk to somebody. What can you do for these two or three things? Whenever I am disciplining, though, for things specifically that I have not laid out a black and white, you do this, you're going to have this happen to you, really, honestly, the only thing I have that black and white is homework. But every teacher varies how they structure it. For other things, I have a little different, I have kind of a three-step progression I go through with them. I start with the least confrontational, and I move forward. Now, this does not include lying, cheating, just blatant rebellion, okay? Those you deal differently. You're going to have to, those are bigger issues. You're going to have to go ahead and meet with them right head on. You're going to have to, yeah, those are bigger issues. You're not going to start as gentle, is what I'm saying here. You're going to go ahead and jump to step number three. But for smaller things like talking in class and so forth, I start as least confrontational as I can, and I build forward. So the first level is be as omnipresent as you can as a teacher. Be as omnipresent as you can. One of the simplest ways is eye contact. So those of you in the back are long ways back there from me physically, but I can get into your space by making eye contact with you. Eye contact does a lot. One gentleman this week said something about, you know, there's a lot of power in just letting the students know you see. And that is so true. Just watch. Make eye contact with them. It does a lot. Walk around. Today, I'm locked up here. He told me I'm not allowed to go more than 3 feet from the mic. But I am a pacer especially when I'm in my classroom. I'm back in among the desks. You get right up beside Chatty Bob, and he's going to be a lot quieter. Just be right there. My clicker or whatever for my overhead has a laser on it. And so I'm often carrying that during history class. That's a way to tag in with a student that's far away from you. You're over here teaching, and over yonder, you know, poor Molly is dazed out. You just put a little red bead dancing around her desk, and she's right there with you again. You know, it's just your presence. You're right there with them. Be as omnipresent as you can. That does a lot. You can do so much by controlling your classroom just by being there. But that doesn't always fix everything. You're not working with saints. So they're going to choose to cross the line. You're going to need to meet with them. So let's say I have someone that's just, he's crossing the line with my chattering. So I'll say, look, I need to meet with, you know, math class. He's just not getting quiet. I say, look, I need to talk with you after class. And I go on with teaching. So at break time, I run all my breaks myself most of the time. And I'm also the classroom teacher. I don't really have an aide. So it can be a little dicey if you're that, you need to make sure you're with your students as much as possible. So these meetings have to be moving pretty quick. And I'll say, look, you need to stay. And it's a very quick meeting. What did you do wrong? Why do you think our classroom sets that standard? They can usually answer that question. Why do you think I ask you to be quiet? And then I'll just say, look, I expect you to be on my team. I need you on my team. Can you pull up for me? Most of the time, it's a yes, ma'am. They want to be on your team. They want to. And you can go for break. Now, that doesn't fix everything. Notice this is just That actually does a lot. But sometimes you'll still have a student who actually has a heart issue. So then you're going to need to meet with them and say, look, what did you do? Why did you do that? And I'll say, look, we've had this meeting already before. We're going to have to suffer some consequences. And I'll level it at them. You know, they're goofing off in the bathroom. Well, they need to go clean the guy's bathroom. They are, depending on what it is, you can't actually necessarily go straight with the consequence. Maybe just say, you know, you wasted your classmate's time because you were chattering so much. Well, I need you to go put in some extra homework time or something like that. One time I had a lad who just was nixnooksy. It just kept messing with his neighbor, and I could not get it. Finally, I met with him one afternoon and said, look, I said, you have really been bothering your neighbor, and your neighbor's not getting his work done, so I need you to go do his page in spelling. Now, I knew that student one was an A student. He really didn't need to do that spelling page. And so I asked the nixnooks to go do the extra page of spelling for his friend. Never once did he bother that friend again. You know, so sometimes just thinking about what can I do that will actually help them see, connect with what they did that was wrong. I will say this, if you do one and two well, be present, be very intentional at holding that high line, nip it in the bud, meet with them at break time, make them do what you want them to do. You don't hit number three near as often. You will. You're called to shape hearts. That's your calling. But it does limit those meetings. Now, you've prepared, you've taught the day, and then you get to wrap up your teaching experience. We don't have a lot of time here, so I'm just going to make a few comments here. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to. It's okay. You are a learner. Failure is just a part of that learning experience. Knowing how to navigate your personal failures is huge because you can allow your personal failures to actually cause yourself to step back from what you're supposed to be doing. So don't allow those failures to cripple you. Recognize yourself as the student of the master teacher, and just as you tell your student, correct that math lesson up, it's not a big deal. You now know 6 times 3 is 18. It's not that big a deal. Treat your own mistakes that way. You're a student, the master teacher. Go back, apologize. I've had to. Correct your mistakes. Learn and keep going. Don't allow your failures to cause you to pull back. Don't allow your successes to cause you to step forward in places you shouldn't. Sometimes you can start kind of like, I got this thing kind of rolling. Be careful. It can cause you to step in ahead into places or ahead where God doesn't necessarily want you. Your successes are there because of the gifts God has given you, the knowledge, the experiences He's given you. I will say in accepting or in working through some of the difficulties of your student, you know, you're after school, you're analyzing all of these problems. Just a reminder, all of your students are different because that's how God created them. You're not called to perfect them. That's how God created them. Y'all would say I'm crazy to say that I want all my achievement tests to come back with everybody in the 70 percentile and higher. That's unrealistic. But yet sometimes after school, we're driving ourselves to that point. We feel guilty. We're obsessing about these struggling students and guys. That's how God created them. We're just called to come alongside them and develop them. Accept their differences, their strengths, and their weaknesses as part of how beautifully they're created. Remember, you're called to run with them just a little piece of their journey, not take them all the way home. You're just a part of it a little bit. You don't need to take them all the way home. A leader, isn't a leader really a sender? It hit me the other day in the general session that a king, when he was comparing kings with leaders, with teachers, the kings are senders. We teachers are really senders. I tell people that I teach school because there's so many things in life I want to do that I can't possibly do it all myself. So that, you know, I would like to work in the prisons. I'd love to start vocational training in the prisons, and I want to do an after-school program, and I want to work in the dumps of Mumbai. And I think about the people and drug situation of New York City, and I've been out to LA and the homeless, and they call for me there. Like, so much I want to do. I can't do it, but I can prepare my students to go be the firefighters, the EMS. You are a leader. You've been called to lead these students through the academic year so that at the end of the year, ultimately, you can send them on better equipped. I found a beautiful promise a couple years back. This is for you. But the path of the just is like the shining light that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. That's you. Go let your light shine.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.